Want to draw some lessons from this psalm tonight. We'll not look at all the verses, but some of them anyway. And verses 1 and 5 paint a very, very contrasting picture. We'll just read those two verses again together. Verse 1, also verse 5, we read, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. And yet David was also able to say in verse 5, I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. There was a man named Joe, and he was always worrying. In actual fact, his friends nicknamed him Joe the Worrier. One day, one of his old friends, Bill, was walking down the street. And as he was walking down the street, he looked over on the other side of the road. And there he saw, lo and behold, his friend Joe the Worrier. But he got an absolute shock because Joe the Worrier was looking anything but worried. As he looked at him, he was bouncing happily along the street and he was whistling as if he hadn't a care in the world. Bill could hardly believe his eyes. He had known this man for years, for decades. He knew him, as I said, as Joe the Worrier. And of course he thought to himself, well, something is different about Joe. And so he crossed the road and he had a conversation with Joe. He wanted, of course, to know why Joe wasn't worrying now. Joe said to his friend, Bill, it's wonderful. I have not worried now for several weeks. His friend Bill asked him, well, what did you do to break free from worry? How on earth did you manage to become to be like this? Joe told him. He said, I've hired a man to do all the worrying for me. Of course, Bill asked the next question. Well, you've hired someone to do all the worrying for you. How much does this man charge? Joe said to him, he's quite expensive. He is $1,000 per week. Bill couldn't believe it. He said, what, $1,000 a week? How on earth do you afford to pay the man? And Joe replied, well, that's not my worry anymore. If ever there was a picture of a worried man, it is David in Psalm number 3. And especially at the beginning of this psalm. In verse 1, he speaks about the increasing enemies rising up against him. And in verse 2, these enemies were then even taunting him. They were saying to him, there is no help for you in God. Often, when you read the Psalms and read through all 150 of them, you're often wondering, when did David write that psalm? Or when did that other individual, Hezekiah, Solomon, whoever it might be, what were the circumstances as to why they then wrote this psalm? Often you're wondering the case. But we're not wondering here. The superscription, the little sentence at the beginning of the psalm, tells us, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. And immediately we're told the context then. Here is David, and he was worried. What was the cause of his worry? Well, it was that incident in the book of 2 Samuel, whenever his young son, Absalom, raised up against him and attempted to usurp him from the throne of Israel. In verse 1, David then speaks of an increasing number of enemies being raised against him. You see, these were dark and gloomy days for the sweet psalmist of Israel. He had a son that was rebelling against him, and every day it seemed that he was losing more and more ground in terms of his kingdom or his dominion over the nation of Israel. The nation, it was beginning to be swept away by the young and handsome Absalom. David had gone from being the king of a nation that he loved so well to actually being a fugitive on the run in his own nation. And now he speaks of the enemy closing in against him. And yet, in spite of David and in spite of the worry that he obviously had, as he exclaimed in verse 1, O Lord, that the enemy, it's rising up against me. In spite of his obvious worry and the obvious taunting even of the enemy, yet he was wonderfully and marvelously still able to say in verse 5, I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. And he was able to say that in the midst of all of his difficulty, in the midst of all of his worry, that he was able to go to his bed at night. He was able to lie down on that bed. He was able, as we would say today, to get a good night's sleep and awake the next day, refreshed, reinvigorated, and ready to face whatever would come his way. You see, rather than being won over by worry, we can win over worry. You can know what David knew, victory over worry. Of course, you ask tonight, how does it happen? What is the magical formula, as it were, to break free from worry? Well, if you think that that's how it happens, then I'm here to disappoint you tonight. I'm sorry. But it is all about perspective. That really is the secret to conquering worry. Yes, in the opening two verses, David here, he speaks of the difficulties of the enemies, and he was obviously very conscious of them. And yet from verse 3, down through to the end of this psalm, verse 8, we read of his perspective, and it is on higher ground. He could look to the Lord as the lifter up of his head. The Lord lifts the head, and he enables us to look at the one who is our shield. Wonder tonight, in terms of worry, is it a picture? Is this a picture of you? The head, it's bowed down, and it's your eyes are all around the circumstances that surround you. You are consumed with them. Wonder perhaps is that you? And the Lord is saying to you tonight, we just need to lift up our eyes. We need to lift up our head. And he is the lifter up of our head. Because it's only as we lift up our head and we survey the God who is in control of all of our circumstances and the one who protects us in the midst of all of our troubles. It's only as we do that, that we will know victory over worry. And so tonight I want to speak on the subject, victory over worry. Victory over worry. I have a few thoughts on worry that I want to leave with you in thinking about this psalm. The first thing I want you to see here, looking at David and his circumstances, I want you to see the foundation of worry. The foundation of worry. Verse 1, we read, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. As I said and alluded to already in the context, David here, he's speaking of an increasing number of enemies and a decreasing number of friends. His enemies are increasing, and all the while, as days pass and days progress, it seems as if he's losing friend after friend. Now, whenever you trace the relationship of David and his third son Absalom, you will discover that it didn't just break down and disintegrate all in one incident. In actual fact, it took years and years of incidents and fallout for David then to now be on the run from his son. In 2 Samuel, you read of a disintegrating relationship between Absalom and his father David. Where did it all start? Well, it all started when Absalom slew Amnon, David's first son, King David's oldest son. Why did he do that? Well, there was the incident involving Tamar. Who was Tamar? Well, Tamar was Absalom's sister. And you sadly read of Amnon going in and forcing himself against Tamar and committing gross immorality with her. And so what did Absalom do? Well, he took matters into his own hands and he actually slew his half-brother for such a gross sin. After this, Absalom went on the run, and he fled to his maternal grandfather, the king of Geshur. There he stayed with his grandfather for 3 years. After that 3 years, he then came back to Jerusalem, and he was restored again unto his father David. But whenever he came back to Jerusalem, he actually had to wait for approximately 2 years before he would even have a hearing before his father, the king. His father, of course, was so overcome with what young Absalom had done to his eldest son, Amnon. However, 2 Samuel, you read that as Absalom was in Jerusalem, you begin to see him sow the seeds of discord amongst the people of God. 2 Samuel chapter 15 verse 6 sums it up well. We read, "On this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel." In Bible times, individuals came to the city gate. And that was really the court system, the legal system of the city at that time. And they came to hear King David. Maybe they brought a family quarrel and they came to David and they said, "David, intervene in this situation." What did Absalom do? He waited at the gate and he began to question his father's ability to judge in such cases. And eventually, this verse tells us, Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. He gathered together a following. And over a period of 4 years in total, after he was restored to his father, he gradually stole the hearts of the people. And it all came to a halt whenever he had gathered enough individuals to then invoke a revolt in Hebron. And there were many of David's trusted soldiers and advisors. And what did they do? They changed sides and they now followed after this young usurper, a young Absalom. Ahithophel, for example. Ahithophel was David's advisor. He was his counselor. And yet you read very plainly of Ahithophel switching allegiances and giving Absalom actually the advice to go against his father David. And the reason I'm giving you all of this information is that I want you to see the cause or the foundation of David's worry was a gradual decline in circumstances. It wasn't just one enemy, or it wasn't just one incident in his life. Rather, it was due to a gradual worsening of personal circumstances. In verse 1, the word foe here in the Hebrew, it is understood as one who causes distress by crowding. In other words, as David looked around, and he looked at all of his foes now, he was greatly distressed. And it was as if they were crowding in against him. We would say he was being backed into a corner. So it wasn't that he just had one foe or even two foes or one problem or quarrel within his family. No, over a period of 6 or 7 years, he had watched Absalom steal the throne underneath his very nose. He had watched Absalom take some of his most trusted soldiers and some of his most trusted individuals. And then in 2 Samuel 17, it climaxes and we find David actually going on the run from his son Absalom. So I want you to see David here. Now he feels crowded and now he's backed into a situation where he is overwhelmed and overcome with worry. You see, the battle with worry, whilst it often starts small, it quickly becomes large. It is often the compounding of issues that lead you to be overcome with worry. Is it not so often the case, beloved, where it's not just one issue, but it's two issues, three issues, four issues, and they all stack up on top of one another? And that is whenever you're overcome with worry. Or perhaps is David a picture of you this evening? Oh Lord, how the foe, it is increasing. And maybe perhaps there's been one problem that's come along in your life. And it's caused you some anxiety, yes, maybe some level of worry. But you were able to deal with that through the grace of God. But then another problem came. And then another problem came, and another problem came, and the problems, they just stacked up. And now, like David, you are overcome with worry. You think of the varying problems that David would have faced. You think about it. Here he has son fighting against son. Here he is just beginning to lose his job. Remember this, he's on the run now. Absalom's beginning to get a following. And perhaps there is family problems, perhaps there is even financial pressure that is causing David to be overwhelmed and overcome. Maybe perhaps it's one of those two reasons that I have just cited. Maybe it's other things. Maybe it is health. Maybe it is other things, and they're just compounding, and the list is getting longer day by day. And tonight you're overcome by your foes. They're crowding you out, as it were, just as they were crowding David. Psalm 143, verse 4. David, he says, "Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is desolate." Of course, the word desolate in Scripture, it means empty, it means void, it means hollow. And David said that his life was empty. Why? Because he was overwhelmed. His heart was desolate. There was nothing left because he was so overwhelmed. There was a great emptiness inside. He was drained. Drained emotionally and spiritually. Again, Psalm 55 and verse 5. "Fearfulness and trembling are come upon me, and horror hath overwhelmed me." You see, it is often not one problem, but many problems that cause you to be overwhelmed. I wonder, is that you tonight? Well, the Lord knows. The Lord knows the many problems. The many problems. And there's so many of them. And they're just becoming more numerous and more accentuated. And you just seem to think to yourself, "I don't know where to turn. There are just so many problems." It's like the man I heard of who once said, "I've got so many troubles right now that if anything bad were to happen to me today, it would be 2 weeks before I can worry properly about it." Maybe that's just like you. There's just so much, and if there was just another worry, it would just go to the end of the pile. Here's David, and he's worried. And his enemies are even coming along and are questioning that God is with him. Oh, in verse 2, they come to him and they say, "God has cast you off. God has forsaken you." And maybe the enemy, or the accuser of the brethren, Satan himself, he has come along to you. And he's maybe put that seed in your mind. Has the Lord cast you off? Oh, the Lord, he's not with you. If he was with you, why would all of these problems be coming your way? So there is the foundation of his worry. I want you to see, secondly, then, not only the foundation of worry, but I want you to see the focus beyond worry. The focus beyond worry. Verse 3, we read, "But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory, and the lifter up of mine head." In the first two verses, you have the picture of a man whose head is bowed down. A man who is overcome with worry. Fear has come in, and it has completely overwhelmed him. Here he is focusing on his foes, his fears, and he has totally forgotten the Father in it all. But now in verse 3, there's a wonderful change of perception in the life of David. He says that the Lord was the lifter up of his head. And yes, here he is, and his head is bowed down. His head is bowed underneath all of the difficulties that he's facing. But now the Lord has lifted up his head. He calls the Lord his shield. In the Hebrew, it conveys the idea of something that surrounds the entirety of a man. It's not the picture of a shield that just covers part of a man, maybe his torso or something. It's one of those large shields that would cover the entirety of a man. And I notice here that he doesn't say, "my shield," but he says, "Lord, thou art a shield for me." And here he's thinking generally about God being a shield to his people. What he's really saying is this, is that he could look to the past and the Lord had shielded his people. And he is now comforting himself in that knowledge that as the Lord has completely compassed his people in times gone by, he is also then a shield for me today. He also calls the Lord here Jehovah. And that is the covenant name for God. It is the name that signifies God as a covenant-keeping God, one who cannot break his promises. So here, the Lord has lifted up his head to behold the one who is his shield and the one who doesn't break his promises, the one who does not cast off his people. Now David is leaning hard on the one who doesn't change and the one who, as David knew, would protect him as his shield. He also calls him his glory. In other words, the Lord was his honor. And he puts it all together. And now he is simply saying, the Lord's lifted my head. Oh, in verses 1 and 2, my head was taken up with all of the enemies around me and all of the problems that I faced. But now my head is lifted. He has lifted his head in his distress. Rather than being under circumstance, we need to then get over circumstance to be over them. How do we do that? Well, God simply. God, he lifts our head and he helps us to behold the one who is our shield. So often when we come and problems come our way, we tend to have microscopic vision. What I mean by that is this, is that we take those small issues and we zoom in on them. Just like an individual would get a microscope and would zoom in on one small thing. We tend to do that, don't we? We tend to take the few problems that are there, and we tend to just be completely focused on them, and we zoom in on them instead of the great covenant God, the one who brings the problems our way anyway, the one who changes not, the one who does not break his promises, the one who completely surrounds us at such occasion, one who lifts the head whenever it is bowed down. And so I wonder today, can you say that you're bowed underneath circumstance or you're over them, looking down at them? That's the perspective that God desires you to have as you go through worry. And that is only the only way that you will really know genuine help and victory over worry. Our outlook is determined by our uplook. There's so many times in Scripture where we're told to simply lift up our eyes. For example, Isaiah 51, we read in verse 6, "Lift up your eyes to the heavens and look upon the earth beneath. For the heavens shall vanish away like smoke, and the earth shall wax old like a garment, and they that dwell therein shall die in like manner." Here in this context in Isaiah, you're nearing the time when the Babylonians would come and take the children of Judah as captives. And what does Isaiah say? He says, "Lift up your eyes to the heavens." And he's actually telling them to look not only beyond the first coming of Christ, but the second coming of Christ. Look to that time when the heavens shall vanish away like smoke. And the earth it'll wax old, like an old garment. In Psalm 5 verse 3, we read, "My voice shalt thou hear in the morning, O Lord. In the morning will I direct my prayer unto thee, and will look up." And David's writing Psalm 5 in the same context as Psalm 3, when he's on the run from Absalom. You see, when you focus on your foe, you then forget your father. But when you focus on your father, you then forget your foe. Wonder tonight, what is your focus? What is your focus? Is it honed in on your foe, on the many worries that you have? Or is it focused in on your heavenly Father, who is your shield, who is your exceeding great reward, the one who is with you? John Wesley one day was walking with a Christian friend through the countryside. This friend, he was overcome by worry. He was plagued with doubt, and he had many anxieties creeping over his soul. He said to him, "I don't know what to do with all of my worries and troubles." Just as he said this to John Wesley, John Wesley looked over to the nearby field and he saw a cow. And this cow was looking over the wall. He said to his friend, "Why does that cow look over the wall?" His friend said, "Because it can't see through it." And Wesley said, "Exactly. Exactly." And that's the same with you and your trial. Try looking upward. Try looking over your trials and upward to God. Where are you looking tonight? Where is the gaze? Where is your focus? So there is the foundation of worry and the focus beyond worry. I want you to see thirdly here, there is the freedom through worry. The freedom through worry. Verses 5 and 6, we read, "I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about." Whenever David was on the run from Absalom, at this stage, as he writes Psalm 3, He is located in a city named Mahanaim. In 2 Samuel 17, we read in verse 24, "Then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom passed over Jordan, he and all the men of Israel with him." Now, where was Mahanaim? Well, it was about 10 miles away from the River Jordan. It was a city in the midst of a mountainous region. It was actually where Jacob, he met with the Lord as he was about to meet his brother Esau, as he hadn't seen him for many years and was worried. As it was a mountainous region, it was an area where it was extremely rough and rocky terrain. On top of this, David is fearing potentially now going to battle against his son at this stage. And yet there is the wonderful picture of David here, being free and knowing freedom throughout his worry. He said in verse 5, "I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me." Here he was, in the middle of a mountainous and arid area. Wasn't exactly the greatest location for a good night's sleep. And yet he was able to say, "I laid me down and slept. And I awaked the next morning, and the Lord sustained me." What a picture of contentment. What a picture of freedom throughout all of his worry. And he then went on in the next verse to say, "I would not be afraid, even if there were 10,000 men against me." My, what a picture of freedom, of peace, of calmness, of serenity throughout all of his worry. You see, in the midst of the furnace, you can know freedom. You can know peace in the midst of the storm. How do you know peace? Well, it goes back to where your focus is. If your focus is on your foes, then you will not know peace. But if your focus is above your foes, and you're looking down at your foe, and your trials, whatever it might come your way, then you will know peace. You will know that freedom in the midst of all of your difficulty. You'll be able to say like David, "I went to bed and I slept. And I woke the next day." And sum it all up by saying, "The Lord sustained me." There's nothing better than a good night's sleep. And I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about there. And here's David in the midst of it all. And he said, "I had a great night's sleep. I slept calmly. I went to bed and I got up the next morning. The Lord has sustained me." And it comes back to focus. It comes back to that. I can't stress that enough. You need to get your focus on the one who is your shield, the one who lifts our head in the midst of trial and difficulty. Psalm 127 verse 2 says, "It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep." Here he's speaking of excessive worry and effort. The thought of sitting up late, the thought of getting up ridiculously early in the morning and eating the bread of sorrows. The thought here is of excess. Why do we do that? Why is there a need to do that? That's what he's really saying here, Solomon. "So he giveth his beloved sleep." The Lord gives you sleep. He gives you it as a gift from himself in the midst of difficulties. Vance Havner, he said, "Worry is like a rocking chair. It will give you something to do, but it won't get you anywhere." And that's so true. You can go back and forwards in a rocking chair, but you're not going anywhere. And that's what happens in worry. We focus in on the worry, and we focus in on the difficulty and the particulars, and we come back and forward and back and forward, and we don't get anywhere. And all we do is waste time and energy and even mental capacity that God has given us. And David realizes this, that no amount of worrying can change his circumstances. And so he goes to bed. It's a good night's rest. One last thought. The foundation, the focus, the freedom. And once he also the fulfillment above worry. The fulfillment above worry. Verse 8, we read, "Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Selah." The word salvation here, it has the same source as the word help in verse 2 and save in verse 7. It has the thought of victory. Here's David. And what is he doing? He is singing a song of victory. Yes, his circumstances haven't changed. Yes, he is on the run from his son Absalom. He is on the run from many foes that are increasing against him. And yet, he was able to say that the Lord grants victory. You see, there is a wonderful sense of repose and fulfillment here because David knew the general truth, as he said in verse 8, that God's blessing is upon his people, even when it doesn't seem that way. He said this, "Thy blessing, Lord, your blessing is upon your people." And he recognized that the Lord was blessing him. Now, it would be very easy for David not to think that way. After all, here he is, he's on his own. His son is rising up against him. His own armies are coming against him. He might have to go to battle even against his own son. But he knows this, "The Lord's my shepherd and I shall not want." He knows that he is one of the king's children. And he knows that the Lord always blesses his people. He always blesses his people. And so he comforts himself in this. There's a wonderful sense of fulfillment in it all. Lord, it doesn't matter what happens here. Your blessing is upon your people. And so it's upon me. Now, the Lord did grant victory to David. Unfortunately, it resulted in the slaying of his son Absalom as the two armies went together against each other in battle at the wood of Ephraim. The Lord did deal with Absalom. But even if the Lord didn't deal with Absalom and the result of his death, the blessing of the Lord would still have been upon David. And so David encourages himself in this general truth that the Lord always blesses his people. And I wonder tonight, have you got a hold of that? Is there this wonderful sense of fulfillment that no matter whatever should come my way, that the Lord's going to bless me? Yes, it might be and might seem and feel evil in the sense of bad, but nonetheless, the blessing of the Lord is always upon his people. Are you one of his children tonight? Because you cannot claim hold of this promise if you're not one of his children. Do you revel tonight in this knowledge that the Lord, he will always bless me in spite of the difficulties I face? George Mueller, he said this. He had to confess, "I saw more clearly than ever that the first great and primary business to which I ought to attend every day is to have my soul happy in the Lord. It is not about how much I serve the Lord, but how I might get my soul into a happy state and how the inner life might be nourished." Now here's a man who served the Lord faithfully. Here's a man who housed hundreds of orphan children in Bristol. But what was his chief goal in life? To have his soul happy in the Lord. It was not about how much he did, but how much he was contented in his Maker and in his Savior. And here's David doing just that. He is getting his soul into a happy state. And that then enabled him to have victory over worry and to serve the Lord, whatever the circumstances that he found himself in. Victory over worry. May the Lord encourage your hearts this evening.